At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Turks and Caicos. Enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Turks and Caicos.
Turks and Caicos.
We're discussing the film 2014 Turks and Caicos today.
Starring Bill Nye.
Bill Nye.
Helena Bonham Carter. Rupert Graves. Ralph Fiennes. And Winona Ryder. And Christopher
Ralph Fiennes in a 30-second appearance?
Very quick appearance.
30-second appearance to tee up his leading role in the third installment of this trilogy.
Yeah, so folks, this is the second movie.
In a trilogy. Yes.
Jeff, can you tell the audience what the trilogy is called?
It's called the Johnny Warwicker trilogy.
The Johnny Warwicker trilogy. So these are classified as TV movies, yes. TV films.
But the British definition of TV movies.
Exactly.
Which is a very different thing.
Very different. I think like technically Sherlock, the BBC show with Benedict Cumberbatch. There's a murky area.
Sherlock is very murky.
Each episode is like an hour and a half, and there's three episodes per season. But they call each season a series.
Yeah.
So, like, there's three series of BBC Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock, in case folks don't
know. The British have the most fucked up television, like, thing ever.
They call their main news just, like, Channel 4.
Yeah. But, like, the thing about British television is that it's all BBC. It's a BBC original series.
BBC.
It'll be a BBC original series.
We've alienated our Australians, so like...
we got to get the Brits out of here. Yeah. We kicked them out 250 years ago. We'll do it again. And so you like...
I guess you could say they kicked us out 300 years ago.
Yes.
Because by religious persecution, that's why people fled Britain to come...
The Mayflower and... 1687, we sailed the open sea for glory, God... And whatever.
It's God Save the King.
God Save the King. Yeah, it's God Save the King now. Okay, so but British television, the BBC. Like, fucking everything is the BBC. It's like Doctor Who, BBC. Sherlock, yeah. BBC.
It's not a big island, Jeff.
It is a somewhat small island. It is substantially larger than the island of Turks and Caicos, though, which we'll talk about.
Wait, what?
It's substantially bigger than the island of Turks and Caicos.
Great small Britain island. Would be bigger than Turks and Caicos.
But it's
we're going to talk about what Turks
everything's
and Caicos.
Everything's a BBC original series.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, well, that's like, you know, an HBO original series, like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's an HBO original series. And then there are seasons. And No. It's an original series. And the individual segments are the series.
Yes.
And so they're like series three.
Yeah.
It'd be season three.
Yeah.
But then they're like, yeah, but each one's an hour and a half long.
But it's not a TV movie.
And I'm like, is that not a movie? It's like the Columbo question.
Yes, you're right.
Where Columbo is like an hour and a half long. They came out at random times. And it's like, is Columbo not just a bunch of movies strung together?
Yeah, just like quick Wikipedia, Sherlock TV series, British mystery crime drama television series.
Because here's what's interesting about this episodes. Fucking movie.
It's a TV. It's a TV movie.
Yeah. This movie, difficult to watch.
Yeah.
It's not streaming anywhere.
Correct.
Seemingly the only way to legally watch it was to purchase a DVD.
Which you did.
Which I did. Now, so here's what's interesting.
Uh-huh.
There's two DVDs you can buy. There's uh-huh. the American and the British one.
I don't know this.
The American DVD, Turk is the, and they're each like a combo pack of the trilogy, which is the movie Page 8, 2011, Turks and Caicos, 2014, and Salting the Battlefield, 2014.
Yes, yes. I am aware of that.
Yes. And so the American one is the Johnny Worricker film trilogy. The British one is the complete Johnny Worricker series.
Okay. So I could see
and I'm like,
the confusion.
So what are we fucking talking about?
What is it then?
What are we talking about?
So if I look up Worricker trilogy on Amazon yes. DVD.
Yes.
It's going to pull up. Okay. Worricker, the complete trilogy. I see that DVD. You can buy for, there's a $25 and there's a $32. $32 got Prime though.
Yes.
And then there's Worricker Trilogy 3 DVD box set, Page 8, Turks and Caicos, Salting the Battlefield, non-USA format, PAL, Reg Point 2 import, United Kingdom.
Like, look at this. Worricker, the complete series.
Yes, and I'm seeing that. There's the complete trilogy, and then I see Worricker, the complete series.
It's a little annoying.
It's very annoying.
But
I think they're basically like these three movies make up the series.
Yeah, the series.
Because I think Brits think of series as like a package.
Yes.
When you're like, can you bring me a series of muffins? That you know, they're talking about a package yeah. of muffins. It's like
yeah. But it's like when
it's a package of movies.
Jeff. Like when I go to Walmart, mm-hmm. go to like the DVD section.
Yeah.
And I buy like the complete Alien franchise.
Yes.
It doesn't say the complete Alien series usually. What's yeah. like the Alien like collection? I mean, yes. Sometimes it does say series.
The quadrilogy.
The best name for packaging of all time.
Really is.
We used to be a proper country.
We did. But now there's more than four Alien yeah. movies. Yeah, so you can't.
It should be the complete septology or whatever that number would be.
Is that what it would be? Septology?
Because there's seven now, right?
Right. Alien,
unless
aliens,
you count AVP,
Alien
and
3.
Then it's the nonology.
Well, because if you, yeah, you're right. If you include AVP and AVP Requiem, then that. you like that we're I just do doing like this?
okay. Folks, the reason we're getting so in the weeds and the reason Stuart's playing that music is because...
Turks and Caicos? Are we going to Turks and Caicos?
We're going to talk about Turks and Caicos. It's because Stuart and I got a lovely experience this week. I knew this movie was like originally not on the list because I didn't know it fucking existed.
Oh, I didn't know it wasn't on the list.
It was not on the list for a while. I found it on Winona's IMDb. And I'm like, oh, this is like a movie. We got to cover this.
Yeah.
And so I put it on the list. And thank God I did. thank God I did.
Thank God you did.
Because what a delightful hour and a half of prime British, like, prime British.
I won't say that this felt like a waste of my time.
I also not say I understood entirely what happened in the movie.
I will also not say that I thoroughly had a pleasant, amazing experience, but like tolerable and like insightful.
Because seemingly the pitch of this movie, and I assume the other two movies in the trilogy, is
we did not watch, by the
what
way.
What if, yeah, I was thinking like, should I watch the other ones?
And then I'm like, it starts with Page 8 is yes. the name of the first. Yes. Johnny Worricker. It's Johnny, by the yes. way. You better not.
He's an MI5 agent.
MI5, yes. So he would then know Tom Cruise? No, Tom Cruise is not MI5.
No. Yeah, Tom Cruise is the IMF. James Bond is MI6.
You can see where I would get very confused on that.
But here's the thing, is the pitch of this movie, and I presume the others in the trilogy, is what if James Bond was a little older, didn't go and get involved in action sequences, was quite nice, and was against the war on terror. And that is the pitch of this movie. Because the plot, the construction of this movie is identical to a James Bond movie.
Yes.
It even ends with him making out with a woman on a boat.
Yes.
As all the Sean Connery Bonds did.
Yes.
Except there's no action scenes.
No action scenes.
He kind of just walks around and is nice to people. It's like, what if you watched Goldfinger, and instead of, like, you know, the Fort Knox robbery at the end, the shootout, the fight with Oddjob
and everything. He's able to talk his way out of it.
Yeah, it was just, if he walked up to our Goldfinger, it was just like, so here's what I'm thinking.
So I'm going to go in on a small little tangent here, but yes. Like, have you seen Doctor Who?
No.
So Doctor Who, it's what's really interesting about, like, that series. Yeah. I think I can call it a series.
Speak on this.
Is that Doctor Who, who's this, like, powerful Time Lord being, yes, that can transcend space and time with his TARDIS, right? The whole, like, premise from when they first started the show in, like, the 60s up until what they're doing today is the whole fact that, like, this guy is, like, uber powerful but doesn't use violence to solve problems. And so...
He's a British gentleman.
He's a British gentleman, right. And so... I go on this tangent because do the Brits have something with, like, making their heroes, like, more? Because I feel like it's a very British thing.
The Brits are very proud of themselves being gentlemen.
Okay.
That's why James Bond, when he, like, jumps off a cliff or something, he always adjusts his suit, you know?
Right.
James Bond's the gentleman spy.
Gotcha. I say all that because I was watching this movie. It's like, yeah, it's like a Doctor Who James Bond.
Yeah.
It's like he has all this, like, skills and talents, but he doesn't use it for violence and killing. He usually diplomacy and suave and charisma and persuasion. Like, I don't know. This guy's just, like, nice.
He succeeds at everything by just being nice.
And we should say
he gets away with an insane scheme at the end of this movie.
Yeah, I need to know more about this scheme because I lost.
I'm not quite sure what scheme is, but he does get away with it.
So Johnny Warwicker is played. We mentioned older James Bond. Yes. Now, people in their mind, when they think of James Bond right now, they think of Daniel Craig. So if you think older than Daniel Craig, which actor would you put in that spot? Ladies and gentlemen, would you be surprised to hear that actor, of course, is none other than Bill Nighy?
Cue the music. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode of Nigh and Nighty, hosted by Jess Sweeney and Stuart Elmore.
Oh, my God.
Covering the films of Bill Nighy. This week, talking about Turks and Caicos. Enjoy the episode, folks.
Okay. Bill Nighy Corner.
Yes.
First
Bill
off.
Nighy Corner. We haven't even talked about Winona yet, but Bill Nighy Corner.
We've not. I just got done talking about Doctor Who.
Yes.
And I have to say...
Where do you think Van Gogh rates in the history of art?
Well,
Yeah.
Big question. But to me, Van Gogh is the finest painter of the moon.
I mean, come on, man. I mean, people... This clip has 27 million views, and it was uploaded 9 years ago. People still talk about the Vincent Van Gogh scene in Doctor Who. Even you recognize it, and you don't fucking watch Doctor Who.
I've never seen an episode of Doctor Who, but I've seen that
but
clip.
But you know this clip. Yeah, everybody knows this clip, and it's, like, partly Bill Nighy just being, like, fucking great because, he's an amazing actor.
No, Bill Nighy is in that, like, that rarefied air of, like, British character actor, classically trained, who's just always good. When's he bad? He come from, like, you know, I forgot he's in Harry Potter. I just remember he's in Harry Potter. He gives the best
for one movie, I think.
He's in two of them.
Two.
And he gives the best performance in a Harry Potter movie in one scene.
Wait. Keep going.
It's the opening of Half-Blood Prince.
These are dark times.
Watch how much work he's doing with his fucking lip in that scene.
No, I totally believe you. Yeah.
But, like, when's he bad?
When's he bad? Something he loves talking about his time on Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, he loved it. He had so much fun.
But, like, I just got to play this clip for you on how he, like, talks about his time on those movies.
Cartoons. For instance, I was once required to be a squid man in a movie. I was an octopus guy. And it was all digitally achieved. So... and I was perfectly happy watching that because what are you going to say? You don't like my squid? Well, then, you know, live with it because it's your problem. And also, I had a very successful, my squid was world class. My squid was an award winning squid because the 100 men and women who created my squid, the first thing the director said to them when they presented the squid was, get your acceptance speech ready. And
I mean...
No, listening to watch like Bill Nye quotes about his work are incredible.
He, oh my God. Yeah. I watched, it's the standard fucking British GQ. Bill Nye talks about his past roles and he talks about like Pirates of the Caribbean. He talks about all this other stuff. He talks about Underworld. Have you seen Underworld, Jeff?
No.
The first one. He's actually in two Underworld movies, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it. I believe it.
Because he's in the very first Underworld as Victor, who's like essentially basically like the what like king of the vampires, basically one of the three vampire lords. And then he's also in their prequel, which is the third movie, Underworld Rise of the Lycans. Ask me why I know this shit. I couldn't tell you. So, Michael Sheen is Lucian. Lest we forget. But yeah, and
these are dark times. Yes. There is no denying.
Look at how much work he does with his lip.
Has perhaps faced no greater threat than it does today.
Yep.
Look at that.
But I say this to our citizenry: we, ever your servants.
My God.
Will continue to defend your liberty and repel the forces that seek to take it from you. Your ministry remains strong.
It's the whole fucking movie.
My God. I hope that was the first scene they fucking filmed with him. Because that's like the first time we ever see Bill Nye in a Harry Potter movie, right?
Yeah, he also like asked to be in the movie. He said, I felt like I was the only British character actor who hasn't yet been in one of
these. That's fair. That's so true.
And because like he is in three scenes.
Yeah.
He is in the opening of that movie. He shows up again in that movie at some point. And then he's in like, he brings Dumbledore's will.
Yeah, I know. Like that's one. I think that's the last scene because afterwards, it's like the minister is dead.
And the guy says he's like the minister's beefed it. You're like, oh, all right, see you, Bill Nye.
Which is like, it's funny because like you see Bill Nye replace the guy who was playing the first minister, and like he got such like a stronger like appearance to him. It's like, oh, this minister is gonna get us.
You know what's great about? First, I just want to say fuck TERFs. Fuck J.K. Rowling.
Of course.
You know what is great about the Harry Potter movies?
What's great about
the
Harry Potter?
Is that when they first, like the first two, Chris Columbus, he is like a kid's movie director.
Yes.
He did like Mrs. Doubtfire and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so those first two movies, like they have like stakes in them, obviously, but they're much more like
kid movies.
They're kid movies.
Yes. Yeah.
And like they cast all these, it was a beloved franchise of kids books. And so all these like British characters, like I'd love to be in the kids wizard movie. And then by the time you get to the eighth movie,
It's like
you're asking Dame Maggie Smith, God rest her soul.
Yeah.
Who passed away this past week.
You
have her delivering, like bringing all these statues to life and just like killing guys. It's crazy. It's so crazy. Alan Rickman being asked to deliver the performance of a lifetime as he dies in a boathouse after being cast as the mean teacher.
Like, my God. Yeah. It is so true. Like that it is all like a kid's movie. Then by the eighth one, it's like, you're going to have to like, euthanize in a first grader.
Yes. Like Ray Fiennes is like the one guy who comes into those movies late enough.
Yes.
For a long-term recurring role that he's like, he knows.
The assignment.
Like, okay, I'm getting into it.
But like, even like the third movie, Peter Pettigrew, who like, he's supposed to be like the sniveling rat man. And then he shows up in
the
fourth movie.
Put some respect on Timothy Spall's name. Timothy Spall is a sniveling rat man. He is a sniveling rat man.
Listen, he shows up in the third movie. He does a little meh.
Yeah.
And then in the fourth movie, he pops up. And what does he do? He kills a 15-year-old.
Yes. Yes.
He kills Robert Pattinson. And cuts off his own hand. Like the man, like it was clearly cast as like a cartoony dude.
Yeah.
And then just like, well, like he kind of has to do all this really gross shit, which we weren't really thinking he'd have to be doing, but it is what it is. Oh man.
Timothy Spall. What a fucking
like,
legend.
No, you're right. Because even like,
do you know what his last scene in those movies is?
Oh, is it like when they're escaping the manor?
They escape like the manor. And in the book, his like, he has a moment of doubt and his like metal hand chokes him to death.
Oh.
Because he's like betraying Voldemort.
Oh.
That does not happen in the movie.
He just gets knocked out.
They hit him in the back of the head with a candlestick, and he's never seen again.
That's really funny.
The Harry Potter movies, overall, very good. They did, however, continually run into the problem of those books are so broad and, like, on a purely structural level, not very well constructed. That, like, they kept running into these problems of, like, fuck, we gotta deal with this guy now.
Yeah, it does feel like the Horcrux thing happened by accident.
Because, like, J.K. Rowling, like I said, fuck TERFs. Her skill as a writer is in, like, the world and the characters.
Yeah.
And, like, that coasts so much that, like, you, it's like Stephen King. You can get around, like, the problems with the prose or the structure because there's stuff that works.
Yeah, and in kid orgy scenes.
Yeah, right. Kid orgy scenes.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about Stephen King is that he was so high on coke and booze that he does not remember writing Cujo. Stuart, imagine just, like, waking up one morning and you have a 300-page book about a rabid dog just on your desk. That's his experience.
Literally, it's the epitome of, like, shitting gold.
Yeah. Like, he just, like, woke up one morning. He's like, oh, Cujo. I guess that's my next book.
I guess I'll sell this one, too. Yeah.
But no, so, like, there's the thing where, like, those movies, they, like, never introduced the, like, magic mirror. And then in the last movie, Harry just has a magic mirror. He's like, hey, look, there's a guy in it. Kieran Hines on the other end of this mirror, guys.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
And then they made the three spinoff movies, which are
really bad.
The fantastic Dr. Dre's Fantastic Beats and Where to Find Them.
Doctor, what? Wait a minute. What is this? Dr. Dre's Fantastic. Remember when they casted an amazing Colin Farrell in a villain role, and then he mutated into Johnny Depp?
Into the beached, bloated corpse of Johnny Depp. That was... I think that's actively the most disappointed I've ever been in a movie theater.
Everybody in the theater was disappointed at that.
Like, I've seen movies that I was looking forward to that I hated, that I was less disappointed than the end of Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah, Joker 2.
You're like, Colin, I'm very excited. Joker 2, seemingly the best of both worlds for me. A movie that both enraged every single person who liked the first one and is also bad on its own merit. Exactly. It's like, you know, two ships in battle sinking each other.
That's like when you see the Black Pearl coming towards the Empress, which is Commodore Norrington. It's the Lord Beckett ship. And then they're like, oh, we can't take on the Empress on our own. And then the Flying Dutchman comes up. They're like, oh,
your pirate's brained, or your pirate's pilled.
I'm pirate's pilled right now. That was a great trilogy. Like, honestly,
they were good.
It really should have ended with a third one because of just, like, it just ended with such a nice, like, and even, like, Johnny Depp's send-off in that third movie, like, you did not need an adventure after that.
It was good.
That was so good. He's not on a ship.
Everything you need to know about the character of Jack Sparrow is that he is perpetually always going to be winding up back in this scenario.
Yes.
Where he's in a dinky little thing off to some next adventure.
Yes.
Perfect ending.
It's the perfect ending.
Yeah.
And they made two more shitty movies.
Yeah. Dead Men Tell No Tales might be the most checked out I've ever seen a person in a movie.
Dude, it took me a while to watch that movie.
Johnny Depp.
And then I watched it a few months. He's actively drunk
in most scenes.
He is so, like, obviously drunk in those. It's not even like, is he playing drunk? No, he is drunk.
He's, like, sloshed.
And if I can see that on screen, I can't even imagine what that's like on set.
But, like, so, like, you cast Colin Farrell. We're going to work our way back to Kirk's and Caicos.
We will. Yes. Colin Farrell.
You cast Colin Farrell.
Amazing.
You disappoint everybody by turning him into Johnny Depp at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
then you make the next movie called The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Where Johnny Depp is the main focus. His sexual assault allegations come out during the, like, marketing of that movie.
Johnny Depp's sexual assault?
Yeah. And the poster.
Wait a minute. What did I miss on that?
The poster for the movie.
Yeah.
Has him turned away from the camera looking at all the other people. It's my favorite thing that they're like, well, how do we market The Crimes of Grindelwald without
the Amber Heard abuse?
Yes.
Shit that was going on. Right. OK, sorry. I was like, wait, what? OK, gotcha.
Sir,
and then they replaced him with
this is the poster for The Crimes of Grindelwald.
Oh, it's great.
They're like, how do we market this without showing his face?
That's fantastic. And then they just replace him with Mads Mikkelsen with completely different hair.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen with different hair and no, like, eyes. Clearly, Mads Mikkelsen is like, I'm not doing that.
I will not be putting that on.
No, it's like, I'm not going to put on this hair. I'm not going to put on this glass eye. You're just going to have to live with it.
And then they canceled the movies because that the one flopped so bad.
There were supposed to be more?
There were supposed to be five.
Whoa. Okay.
There were originally supposed to be three, and then they made them five, and then they made three of them. The second and third one flopped, and they didn't make any more.
Wow.
It's very funny. And now they're making a Harry Potter HBO show, which is going to be a disaster.
No, I've not seen a single person be like, I think that's my laundry.
Yeah.
I've not seen a single person be like, I think that's a good idea. Like,
you know what is the real like tragedy of that?
What?
I feel so fucking bad for the kids they cast in that show.
Yeah.
There will be.
Yeah.
Like, those kids do not deserve what's coming their way.
No, they don't.
People are going to be mad at them because they're not Rupert Grint, Emma Watson, and Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
They're going to cast a black Hermione, mm-hmm. which is going to be, and this poor 11-year-old is going to be like subject to some of the worst abuse
online. Yeah.
Online ever.
It's going to be horrible.
And then simultaneously, they're all going to have to be asked, like, do you support J.K. Rowling's anti-trans ideology?
Oh, it's a double-edged sword.
This is a terrible idea.
Oh, even just after what you just said, purely on the basis of safety, they shouldn't do
this. Any parent who sends their kids to the audition for that, like, it clearly only has one thing in mind.
Well, here, I will say this. It's like, they clearly just don't understand what you just explained mm-hmm. as, like, being at stake. They just don't understand that. And I think,
yeah.
And, you know, listen, if I was like a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 12-year-old being like, you know, I want to be an actor, mom. And it's like, great. They're asking you to audition as Harry Potter in this new Harry Potter show. And you're like, oh my God, that sounds amazing. Yeah. Like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
You don't understand.
It's going to be so upsetting.
And like, I could see some parents being like, yes, trust fund. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I could also see some parents like, I think this would be a great opportunity for my kid. And they just do not understand or know. They're not living on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah.
And oh my God, especially like whoever they cast as Hermione.
Yeah,
it's going to be canceled after one season because they want to they're going to breach their contract. They're going to be like, no
more of this.
Don't you think? Like, you think that after the first season, they'll want to.
Like, the Harry Potter movies.
Each book's a season, I've heard.
Yeah, they would do each book, they would do seven seasons. But like, all the Harry Potter movies, we just talked about this because Bill Nye. They got all these wonderful British character actors.
And they're slowly dying.
To play these roles.
Yeah.
Who are they going to get for the TV show? Anybody, like, people aren't going to want to be associated with this. Because they aren't going to want to have to answer, like, the J.K. Rowling trans questions.
Like, because you just mentioned...
Who are they going to get? Ricky Gervais? Is he, like, the only fucking guy they're going to be able to get for this? Imagine Ricky Gervais coming in and being like, oh, it's me, I'm Dumbledore, I don't care.
This is Voldemort, Andrew Scott.
Yeah,
but no, I've even heard him publicly say this is a stupid idea.
Yeah.
And that's a good question you just brought up, because we just explained like why it would be a terrible idea for the kids.
Yeah.
But they at least may or may not have a choice.
The kids won't have a choice.
They may or may not have a choice.
Yeah.
The adults have a choice, and they're all pretty well informed enough to know to not take this role.
Yes.
So that goes back to your original question. Who are they going to cast?
Yes.
They're going to be a bunch of nobodies.
It's going to be nobodies, or it's going to be like anti-cancel culture, like British people.
I'm not that well versed in anti-cancel culture.
Like, that's why I'm saying Ricky Gervais is going to be the fucking guy.
Is he like an anti-cancel culture British guy?
He's like one of those, like, you're so offended and I don't care comedians. And it's like,
I kind of like that.
It's fine.
Like, it's funny.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I understand. It's like like in the Americanized version, it's very much like I don't know why Tim Allen's coming to my head, because he's kind of in that sort of vein of like, oh, everyone's so offended by whatever.
It would quite literally be like you would have to get fucking like the Tim Allen of Britain to come in and play. But I mean, at least at the very least, it doesn't seem like Bill Nye. I'm bringing us back another layer.
That's great.
Bill Nye good. Doesn't seem to be in that boat.
I would cry if like in a bad way.
Stuart, I'm going to Google Bill Nye cancel culture, and we're going to see what happens.
He just seems very much like kind of like
the first thing that pops up. Bill Nye, I think about death 35 times a day.
Bill Nye strikes me as like an Ian McKellen type, where he doesn't like outright speak on political topics and then puts himself in the crosshairs. But like when asked about it, like, are you aware of like the whole like Ian McKellen talks about going back to this one British place. I don't know. It's fucking...
Bill Nye says he is tired of dying in movies. I want to die in a hail machine gun fire or jumping out of an airplane at 30,000 feet.
Good for him.
Fuck yeah, Bill.
So,
oh, did you see The First Omen? He's really good in The First Omen.
I did watch The First Omen, and he is really good in The First Omen. I like that was a good movie,
That's
by the way.
That's a great movie.
I liked The First Omen. It's really good.
Best horror movie of the year. He's also good in Detective Pikachu, where he plays Mewtwo.
He plays Mewtwo.
Yeah.
Imagine a villain trilogy where you get the Mikkelsen brothers, Mads and
Lars,
and then Bill Nye as their dad.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Be fucking great.
But I'm now bringing us back to Turks and Caicos.
Turks and Caicos.
Yes. I'm now closing out the Bill Nye.
What are the Turks and Caicos?
It's an island in the Caribbean that is owned by the British Crown, but uses the American dollar, as we learned in this movie.
Yes.
So we talked about how this is the second installment in a trilogy.
For folks who don't know, the Turks and Caicos is very close to Cuba. So it's actually closer to the U.S. than it is to Britain.
Yes.
But it's still under... British jurisdiction.
British jurisdiction. So this movie's written and directed by David Hare, who's a very well-respected British playwright, writer, like screenwriter and director.
He's won Oscars.
Yes. He's received two Academy Award nominations for The Hours and The Reader, originally titled films.
All for writing.
Yes. He's done multiple West End shows, including Prentice, Skylight, Amy's View. He's won 8 Laurence Olivier Awards and several Tonys. He's just a very well-respected, like...
Which leads a lot into how this movie gets as big of a cast as it does.
Yes.
And how the previous movie, Page 8, and how the next movie, Salting the Battlefield.
Yes. He exists in that same space. He's like... This isn't a one-for-one comparison, but he's like the... In the U.S. before, you know... We got rid of him. Where like Woody Allen would be able to get basically anyone to be in his movies, including Winona earlier.
Gotcha.
Where it's like, because he was a very well-respected writer.
Yes.
And like a cultural like institution.
It's yeah.
Like, you want to be in a Woody Allen movie.
It's very much classic. You open up your email. It's like, oh, I just got an email. They want me to audition for this David Hare movie. And they drop the dish like, David Hare? And
well, do you know, to bring us to Winona finally.
Yes.
Yes. So
there
she,
we go.
She said... She got a script in the mail with a handwritten letter from David Hare. Yep. That's his. He just sends actors the script with a letter expressing them why I would like you to be in my movie or my play.
He's just like that.
And her quote was, "I was sent the script with a letter from David that I promptly framed and is now hanging on my wall in New York. And it was just brilliant. It was a no-brainer as an actress. It was an enormous compliment and it meant the world to me. A gesture like that from someone like him was overwhelming. It's actually one of the very few times in my life where I've called on my agent to say, I don't even have to read it, just tell them yes. Of course, reading it was amazing, but you just know David's name is only associated with the best writing." Yeah. And so just getting, you know, Winona's on this career semi-upswing at this point. And getting it, like, asked to be in a movie by a very respected British playwright.
Yeah, this is our last movie before we end this era.
Yes,
that we'll cover.
This is the pre Stranger Things era.
Yes, and pre Stranger Things era.
I am delineating because, like, the question we started the show with is like, why does she get to be in Stranger Things, but then why doesn't that translate to a comeback in movies?
Yeah,
and this is the last movie that comes out before season one of Stranger Things.
Right.
Everything after this is post Stranger Things.
This says it came out in 2014.
First season of Stranger Things was summer of 2015.
Yes. Okay. Gotcha. You're right. And I would even say, like, you know, the last week was Homefront. Week before was Iceman. We don't talk about the letter, but Frankenweenie, Dilemma, Black Swan. I mean, like, the Iceman, Homefront are both in like kind of like Millennium Films, Saban Films S style, but she's still getting cast and they have like a reasonable budget.
They're real movies. They're programmers. And they are being put onto the release schedule to make a little bit of money without many grander ambitions.
Frankenweenie is a Tim Burton animation. Dilemma is a Vince Vaughn vehicle. And then Black Swan's an Aronofsky Oscar winner. Yes. So like we're definitely seeing this trend where, as you said, Jeff, she's getting trusted to put back into, like, you know, the mainstream. And this is kind of, I would agree, it's like, oh.
But it's like when you're an actress like Winona, who in the 90s was so in demand.
Yeah.
Like every movie she's in the 90s, she doesn't audition for those. She's asked to be in them.
Yeah.
And it must be kind of nice to just like have that happen again. Just like you get a letter and it's like, I would like you to be in my movie.
A letter from a very esteemed writer and in a very esteemed cast.
Yes. Instead of just being like, I would like to be in your movies, getting told, I'd like you to be in my movie.
Yeah.
It must be very nice for her. And then she gets to work with some of like the best character actors of all time.
I mean, she has some really good scenes with Bill Nighy.
Winona's performance in this movie is interesting to me, because I started out and I'm like, it seems a little shaky. I'm like, I don't know if she's really holding her own here. And then that kind of becomes like the point of her character.
Oh, interesting.
Because like in her first scene, she just seems like kind of like not in the same, you know, room as these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But then you like, as the movie goes on, you realize she's playing a part within the story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so the kind of like would appear, you know, at first to be questionable performance choices.
Sure.
Loop back around to being, oh, interesting performance choice. She's choosing to be, you know, she's playing a person who is playing a person poorly.
We've been down this road before. Yeah,
because she's someone who's trying to get out of this. She's trapped on this island in this sphere with all these rich men who abuse her.
That was sort of the thing that I was really struggling to like understand, because it's hard to understand the plot of this movie.
Yes.
That in turn, it made me difficult to understand like her place in the story.
Yeah.
So,
because it's like she is,
I got the whole abuse by her father, and then that being led to her being abused by
her husband
and all that shit. And like that she's basically like a damaged woman kind of in that role. And I got that performance very well, and I thought she did very good job acting alongside Bill Nighy. Because let's be real, Bill Nighy is acting circles in this movie.
Yeah,
he's just so fucking good, playing like a very like...
And he's very like casual.
He's very casual. Yeah. And like that's where I thought, when I saw Christopher Walken, I was like, oh my God, this could be either amazing or terrible. And it's amazing. Because seeing Christopher Walken, like, and he's not holding back the Walken. He's walking and talking.
I have some lovely quotes about Bill Nighy, about Christopher Walken, and vice versa. Which should I read first?
I know what you're talking about. Read the Bill Nighy one, because I think that's where he talks about him being like nervous.
I was very apprehensive to film the scene with Christopher Walken, because obviously I wanted to do it as well as I possibly could, even more so when working with someone I admire so much. The fact that Christopher Walken should come and play in these films is a marvelous thing for me personally. I admire him as much as, if not more, than anyone I can think in terms of acting. The idea of acting with him is both thrilling and daunting. He plays a CIA operative who's involved in a similar operation to me, investigating this corrupt businessman. The fact that he spots Johnny is an added bonus for him, but it also means he can recruit Johnny to help him. And then Walken says about Bill, "Yes, I was very aware of Bill, and I met him before briefly. I'd always admired him, and when I heard he was doing the film, I was in. I think to spend time with terrific actors is part of what this job is about. I used to be a dancer, so I compare it to dancing. You have a partner and you move together, and Bill's very quick, generous, and responsive."
So they both love each other, and it's great. And you can see that in the movie.
Yeah.
There are scenes together. I'm just having like, again, do I know what they're saying? No.
Do I quite know what what they're
talking about?
I'm like, absolutely, okay, we're on terror bad. I get it.
Yeah.
I get
the U.S. is broke. U.S. Yeah. doesn't like spending money. Okay, I get that. He's CIA. Bill Nighy's in my five. Yeah. I get all that. But like, what are they talking about as it relates to the plot? Not a fucking clue, but they're doing it so well.
Sitting there and just watching Bill Nighy and Christopher Walken sit around a table and talk about the war on terror. It's like sipping a lovely Moscato or something.
Yeah,
it's like
it's a cup of tea. There's
a little kick to it.
There's a kick to it.
You know, it leaves you feeling good. Where it's just like, where Chris Brown's just like, the U.S. You know, we spend all this money on these camps in Afghanistan, and now we got to figure out what to do with them. And Bill Nash is like, well, yes, you know, the coalition of all is not for the coalition for peace, and he's just like, they're talking about war crimes. And he was like, Taking a little sip, and you're like, oh, you swish it around.
I texted you after I watched this movie. It's like, do I understand what happened to this movie? No. But do I think it was a great, like, masterclass of acting?
Yes.
Like, yes.
Yes.
It's, I don't know. Like, folks who are listening to this, it's like, I can't recommend you go watch this movie, A, because you'll have to buy the DVD.
Yes.
And I frankly cannot justify you buying a DVD. Maybe you might want to buy
Maybe you want to watch the whole Warwicker trilogy for kicks.
Maybe you will. I would not like willingly watch this on a Tuesday afternoon while I'm sick from work or whatever. Like, I just would not. That wouldn't be on my to-do list. But I am like, I don't know. Are we going to talk about the plot?
Yeah,
like,
I think we should.
But I how?
We'll summarize it very quick, you know.
Okay.
We'll go through it.
Because I don't really... I don't know what the problem was.
Yeah, I too am a smidge lost on that. However, it's funny Murray finds his fourth build in this movie for his one scene because he's going to be in the next one so much.
Yeah.
Last thing I just want to talk about in context of this movie is like David Hare talking about Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
As he said, Christopher Walken did one scene where he's sitting on the balcony. He just talks about Turk and Caicos being a home for dirty money, and it made me cry. I just sat there and thought, well, I'm never going to hear my work spoken better than that. That for me was a high point. It's always going to be about the acting. The pleasure of being a screenwriter is a pleasure that makes no sense until the actor arrives.
So we have another very generous writer who was able to not only put up Turks and Caicos, the movie, but was also generous to put up the Warwicker trilogy up on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
I'm going to read for you the plot section.
Yes.
I'm going to read for you the entire plot section. You ready?
Yes.
In the first film, page 8, Bill Nighy plays John Warwicker, a long-serving MI5 officer. He is involved in an investigation which results in him leaking a secret report and having to leave the country for his own safety. In Turks and Caicos, he is drawn back into the situation of events that started the first film. At the end, both he and his old girlfriend, Margot Tyrell, who's played by Helena Bonham Carter, have to go on the run to evade capture by MI5. In the final film, Salting the Battlefield, Warwicker manages to resolve the situation, engineering the downfall of the Prime Minister, who is played by Ralph Fiennes, and is pulled back into MI5.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I timed that out perfectly with the music. What can you say? What can you say?
Yes, you did.
That's the trilogy. So you, as I just read for you, in Turks and Caicos, he is drawn back into the situation of events that started the first film. Jeff and I, ladies and gentlemen, have not seen the first film.
Yeah, we've not. I thought to myself, should I watch page 8? Because like I could have. It would not have been hard. And I decided, no.
No.
Because this felt like a really nice vibe to me.
Yeah.
Because normally when we talk about, like, we don't get to talk about an installment in a franchise all too much.
Right.
And, like, when we do, it's usually something we've seen the other movies of, or I watch the other movies. Like, Alien, we've seen the rest.
Yeah, Alien Resurrection, like, we've
seen the other Alien movies.
We've seen all the Alien movies.
That's fair. Like, we covered all the Bowie movies.
Yeah.
Was Travolta in anything, like... No, like, we don't really get an opportunity like this. And I was like, it might be kind of nice to just watch the middle installment of the trilogy and try and figure out what's going on.
I'd say like Austin Powers and Goldmember, but those aren't really like...
And I watched the other two movies.
Oh, see, I would say like I may have watched the other two movies, but I don't remember them. Yeah. But even if you didn't watch the other two movies, it's not that important as it relates to Austin Powers and Goldmember because it's very standalone.
It's a prequel because he goes back to...
That's right.
He's Shagadelic.
Right. So, yes. All that to be said. So... I don't know how to really start this. I guess there is
We pick up with Johnny Warwicker, who has left MI5.
Yes.
He's been hiding out in Turks and Caicos.
Yes.
He seemingly stole a bunch of information from the British intelligence apparatus.
Yeah.
On his way out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And has been hiding out in the sound. It's a very James Bond like thing.
Yeah.
Like there's probably like 5 James Bond movies that start with him hiding out on a tropical Caribbean paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnny Walker lives his day sitting on the beach. He's
sipping
friends
martinis.
With a young kid, sipping martinis and just like kind of bumming around.
Yeah. Then he, through a chance encounter, sorry, I'm also reading the plot of the Wikipedia, with some several American business looking dudes.
Well, first he runs into Walken.
Right.
Who's
yes.
Who's playing Curtis Pellissier.
Uh-huh.
Who's a CIA operative. We don't know this yet. Who's just like, Mr. Warwicka, you should come to dinner with us. Come hang out.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're going to want to be a part of this
conversation.
Yeah. And so Johnny comes with Curtis, and the two of them sit down with three like British or American businessmen.
Yeah, they're all American.
Specifically from New Jersey.
Yes.
They're played by Dylan Baker, James Naughton, and Zach Grenier as Dito, Frank, and Gary.
And for folks who may not recognize the names of these actors, one of them played Dr. Connors in Spider-Man.
Put some respect on fucking Dylan Baker's name. No. He's Dylan Baker, one of our great character actors.
Yeah.
He did play Dr. Connors in the Spider-Man movies, but he was in Trick or Treat.
Cool.
He's great in Trick or Treat. You seen Trick or Treat?
Nope.
Stuart, you would love Trick or Treat. Huge Stuart movie. He's in Anchorman 2. He's in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. You know, he's just one of those guys who always pops up. And you're like, yeah, whenever Dylan Baker pops up.
Oh, he plays a Nazi in Hunters.
Yeah, he's playing Nazi.
Have you seen that scene?
I have not.
Oh, it's so funny.
Is it Al Pacino? Is he in that scene?
It's not. Al Pacino's not in that scene. It's literally like he's talking with an American accent, and then when his like facade breaks, it's like the most evil Nazi accent you can imagine. And then he just murders his whole family in cold blood. It's quite
my icy Nazi.
It's quite entertaining. So I won't go into that. Yeah.
He's here with these three British men and Walken, and the British businessmen are talking about how they're going to build another hotel on this island.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's some light ribbing. Winona joins as Melanie Fall.
That's Winona.
Yes. Who seems a little on edge. Very like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I originally read that
as me talking about the plot of this movie. Yeah.
No, and I originally, like I said, I was reading that as like an uncomfortability with the material and in the performance. And I'm like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But it, as you know, time goes on, it becomes apparent that it's an uncomfortability within the character.
Yeah.
Because she's married. Is she married or the daughter of the guy who she kills? I think they're married, right?
I think they're married.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're married. So yeah, that's Dido is his character name.
Dido.
Played by Zach Grenier.
Yeah, he's like, he's very drunk. And he's talking about how, like, you know, essentially, like, fuck the people on this island. We're going to build a hotel. It's kind of his vibe.
Yeah.
Johnny takes his leave of these gentlemen at some point. The next morning, he wakes up, walks by the beach, and sees that Dito has washed up on shore dead.
Yes.
He's like, oh.
He got hit in the head with an oar.
Yeah, with an oar.
Yeah.
The local police search Johnny's residence. They find a safe room. And they're like, what are you hiding in there? And they open it up, and it's a bunch of shirts. He's like, some men put their money in art. I put mine in clothing.
It's
like $1,000 like button-downs, essentially.
Yeah.
Very nice, very British.
Mm-hmm.
But he's no longer a person of suspicion. However, being a man of intelligence himself, he's a little curious what's going on. He links back up with Walken.
Who he is very quick to just find out and discover that he's CIA.
Yeah, he's CIA. He's like, I knew you were MI5, and you knew I was CIA.
Why aren't you drinking? Yeah. Taking three shots, you haven't taken a single shot.
The two of them make an uneasy alliance to get to the bottom of who killed Dito and figure out what's going on in this island.
Like, but that's my question is, like, why do they care about figuring out what happened?
It seems like, from what I grasp, Christopher Walken has recently been promoted at Langley in the CIA.
Oh, okay.
And he's trying to like clean house and claw back U.S. money that was given to these developers to build like the CIA black sites in the Middle East.
Okay.
Where, like, they would take terrorists and torture them.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get the money back because they overpaid on it. And these companies are using that money to build a hotel, essentially. That's what I grasped.
I mean,
is that like,
see, like,
the companies were grifting the money off the U.S. government, building cheap torture sites, and then taking the money to build luxury hotels in the Caribbean. And and Walken is here to get that money back.
Look how cute she is.
In $200 million. Stuart is like aggressively petting his cat right now.
I don't care. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's like nothing we're going to say in this movie, you're going to care about, ladies and gentlemen, because
in real life, it's very concerning.
Yeah.
But in the context of the movie, it is kind of just the two of them being like, well, there's these torture sites and they overpaid for them, is what you're saying. So we're going to get the money back. Walken's like, yeah, we're going to get the money back. And so they set up this scheme with Winona's help.
That involves MI5.
Yes, because he learns that
the prime minister is
the
like
prime
corrupt.
Minister is essentially grifting money
from MI5 or with MI5.
No, the prime minister. I'm trying to fucking. This is where I'm getting a little lost in the sauce.
No, because there's Ralph Fiennes, who plays the prime minister, and then there's another MI5 guy who's in cahoots with him. Helena Bonham
Carter. Okay, I remember now.
What's his fucking name?
The money that these men.
Rupert Graves.
The money that these guys are like grifting off the U.S. government. They're currently holding it in a charitable foundation called The Bridge, which is run by an ally of the British prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And The Bridge is essentially like post his prime ministership, the prime minister will become the president of The Bridge
and
use
all that
the money in it to be a like worldwide ambassador. And he will travel to other countries and like solve problems is the idea. They're essentially trying to build this massive amount of money for him so that he can become the international peacemaker.
Doesn't sound like a bad idea.
But that the money is also being grifted. The businessmen are being a part of this because they can take money from that slush fund to build these hotels that they've stolen from the U.S. government.
And they want to build hotels on Turks and Caicos.
And they want to build hotels on Turks and Caicos and displace more residents of the island.
Yeah.
And so Johnny sets up basically
you have till the
his
end of
old
this
girl his old girlfriend played by Helena Bonham Carter agrees to bring the guy and like documents proving this from MI5 and Bridge to Turks and Caicos and link up with Johnny even though she doesn't want to see him, and then simultaneously Winona supplies damning evidence from the businessmen because she killed Dito and she wants out.
We find that out pretty quickly.
Yeah. And for abusing her. And Johnny offers to get her off the island if she helps. And so they kind of do this whole like false flag operation at the end. Right?
Yeah. Well, so he goes to this meeting with the businessmen and the MI5 and the director of Bridge played by Rupert Graves.
Yes.
But it's going to be between like the CIA, the business guys, MI5, this Bridge Foundation fuckery. And then Warwicker is there for seemingly no real reason other than just like he wants to facilitate the exchange of papers and money or whatever.
Yeah.
And he tells Christopher Walken, it's like, you got to guarantee my safety because once I go into this and they see me, like I'm on MI5's like hit list, basically. And he'll be like, I'll do what I can.
Yeah, I can do that for you.
And then it turns out after that deal, Christopher Walken's
I sold
like,
you out to MI5.
Well, I thought he said he sold him out to the CIA.
No, he sold,
or no, he sold him out to MI5 because he says, I might need a favor from MI5. So he sold him out to the MI5. Bill Nighy then escapes with Margot, Helena Bonham Carter, who is his ex-girlfriend.
Winona escapes independently. He like puts her on a JetBlue flight.
With like this financial advisor
with this financial advisor who shows up.
Yeah.
It's a smidge confusing, I will confess.
Meredith Eaton.
Yes.
As Claire Clovis, an accountant for Gladstone. None of this shit matters. Like, it's just like, because I don't know what the stakes were. Like, I don't know what was going to happen if they fail. I don't know what was going to happen if they succeed. That's the whole problem of why I don't really care. Like, I don't know what happens if it goes wrong.
Here's the thing. Did I understand what's happening? Not entirely. You know what I did like? Just sitting there listening to them talk
exactly.
about it. It's nice, right?
Exactly. It's there's some really good bits.
Like, isn't it nice to just sit there and just hear them negotiate, like these incredible voices negotiating like financial records?
Oh, it's fucking great.
Just hearing Bill Nye, all right, so what if you give them $200 million, I will not release all the information to the world's newspapers. And Dylan Baker's being like, you're bluffing. Because he's not bluffing. It's so nice. Like, yeah. it's like a nice Swedish massage, you know?
It is a very nice Swedish massage. I'm trying to...
What is this?
Oh, sorry. It's a trailer for British drama bullshit. I thought it was a clip of the... Mm-hmm. Of the movie. I wanted to try to play a clip of the movie, but I don't.
He the end of the movie, like, he.
I know you, don't I?
No, I don't think so.
You said to get in touch if ever I was in trouble.
I missed your name. I didn't give it.
You're gonna have to trust me.
Seeing the price people pay.
We'll pay that price.
Congratulations, you're public enemy number one. Your prime minister hates you.
Will you tell me your name?
David Hare presents
Johnny America.
Turks and Caicos on BBC Two and
Turks
BBC
and Caicos.
So I mean, like, that's not a really good like clip to play because it's like it makes it sound like it's very like more James Bond action bit. It's not. It's very like what you described of just like people talking in a quiet room and a very nice.
But all of the good people get away at the end, which is nice.
Which is good.
Like Johnny and Helena Bonham Carter, they're on a boat. They're making out in the back of the boat. It's very like All the Time in the World-esque.
Yeah.
They're sailing away. But to loop back to the Winona of it all and like kind of tracking her character's arc through this, because Winona did say like she brought her performance in this back to a David Hare quote from the 90s. From the 1992 film Damage, which was written by David Hare. She said, damaged people are the most dangerous because they know how to survive. And she said, I thought that was true of Melanie Fall when I read the script. And that's what I tried to play. Because she's playing a person who has been subject to abuse for so long that she finally, you know, takes the way out and kills her husband. And is now just trying to survive in the aftermath and find her way out of the situation. And she seems like almost ready to give up. When we pick up with her in the story, because she's not eating and she's just drinking endlessly, and Johnny has to kind of convince her that there's more to live for.
Yeah.
And Winona does a nice job of tracking that after that first scene.
Yeah. I thought like past that point, I thought, you know, Winona was holding her own very well with Bill Nye.
It's just hard when it is like, the best British like characters of all time.
Exactly.
And like, she's a very good actress.
What was the movie he was just in that he got nominated for an Oscar, but I don't think he won?
Bill Nye?
Yeah.
Oh, God, what was that? Living, I think it was called?
Living. That's what it was.
Was it Living?
Yeah. He was nominated for an act. It was Best Actor.
That was his first Best Actor nomination.
That's fucking bonkers crazy. That was his first nomination for Living.
He got nominated and then in 2024 was in 7 movies. That's crazy. Now, he was in Role Play, The Beautiful Game, The First Omen, 10 Lives, Gracie and Pedro, Pets to the Rescue, The Wild Robot, and That Christmas.
Oh, it's streaming on Netflix.
He's good in The Wild.
I should watch Living.
He's good in The Wild Robot.
The Wild Robot?
And he voices a stork.
Okay.
Or a goose. He's good in it.
Nice.
Detective Pikachu. It's a Pikachu, isn't it? Winona, you know, it's nice to see her get a chance to actually act in this movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the last two movies we talked about, live action, Homefront, The Iceman, even I'll include The Letter, Frankenweenie and the Dilemma. She's really gotten to like act in them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like she's kind of like a part of the tapestry.
Yeah.
But like this is so British and so
very
play-ish.
Yeah.
That she gets to act in all of these scenes and like actually just like have a performance and a character arc within the structure of the movie. And it's nice to see that.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit.
It's been a little bit. I think to go back to the very beginning, I think it's this what this movie really does for her. I'm glad we covered it. I'm glad it's now in our catalog of Winona movies that we've talked about, because it's I think for me it's like a benchmark movie of like now she's being asked to come on movies that are well by well appraised like creators and artists that they're asking her to do this.
And I mean, I think that's basically everything we have to say about like the plot of this movie, right?
100%.
Because it is hard to.
Yeah. Sorry,
we talked about Bill Nye for like 2 hours. Turks and Caicos and Caicos. I kept saying Turks and Caicos earlier. It's really embarrassing for me.
It's very funny. I did correct you before we started recording.
It's a little funny.
I would have let you just run with it.
Because this movie leads it right into the sequel, which was filmed simultaneously with this.
Should we
Salting the Battlefield? Should we watch
Warwicker trilogy?
Should we watch Salting the Battlefield?
I think we got to watch Page 8.
No, we should just watch Salting the Battlefield.
I don't know. I kind of want to watch Page 8.
You know, last thing I really want to talk about with this movie, though, is the way that he holds his phone. Did you clock this?
Well, are you talking about his fingers?
Well, because he has like a little flip phone and he holds it like this.
That's
great.
That's because
I saw this too.
Yeah, he has a condition on his hand.
But it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean,
it's so cool when he's got the little flip phone and he's just holding it like with the single finger. Oh.
I mean, like Bill Nye, like I don't know the name of the condition that he has to which he can't like use. It's like his pinky and his ring finger on his right or left hand. It's like he can't move them. So he can only flex his index, his middle, and his thumb on one hand. So whenever you see him like shake somebody's hand with that hand, it's like you'll notice he's doing like a gun kind of thing. But he's such a great actor.
He makes it such a part of the character.
That he's so good at doing
he's
that.
He's so effortless and just holding a cell phone with one finger.
Bill Nye, it's like, that problem with that is like, no, there's not a problem. It's like the thing that I was going to point out, it's like people never know Bill Nye has that condition unless they read it in like a bio.
They just think, damn, this guy's good.
And then they're like, oh my God, I never noticed that. Yeah, you wouldn't, because like if there was ever an instance where it would be obvious on camera, he knows how to like play around with it.
Yeah.
Effortlessly. He's a fucking great actor. It's shocked that he only has like one nomination.
What a pleasure to watch this movie.
Have him and Michael Caine shared the screen together before?
I don't know.
That's a waste of money right there if that hasn't happened yet.
Michael Caine is tragically retired.
Oh, I forgot he retired.
Dude, have I ever shown you Michael Caine's Twitter account?
I think I've seen, I know what you're about to say.
He is the one actor where you can tell. That is him running his Twitter account.
Yeah.
Look at this. Read this tweet.
Why do we fall? So we can learn to pick ourselves back up. Batman Begins.
No, just Batman Begin. Batman Begin. Just randomly, congratulations to all those who got their exam results they hoped for. Those that didn't, the best is yet to come. Well, who is he talking about?
Are you kidding me?
Read these three tweets. Read these tweets.
What?
Read these tweets.
We will always have Paris. Beautiful Paris. Give peace a chance.
Tweeting that shit out.
Oh,
Michael Caine, our best poster. On the 7th of August, he just tweeted, calm down. no other context.
So I looked up.
Alfred was all right, wasn't he?
Oh my God. I looked up Michael Caine and Bill Nye, and the first thing that popped up is Michael Caine, Bill Nye, Matthew Good to star in Four Kids and It. So I looked up Four Kids and It. Jeff, do you know what Four Kids and It is?
No, I do not.
I'm going to text it to you, or you can just look at my computer, but look at this shit.
I've already brought it up.
But here's the problem. I'm looking at the
bonus episode.
I'm looking at the cast list here, and I don't.
Bill Nye is not in this cast.
Bill Nye is not in this cast list. So either I don't, either he dropped
Michael
out.
Michael Caine as the voice of Semede Sand Fairy.
So what this tells me,
folks,
ladies and gentlemen,
and if you're driving the car right now, risk of the accident. Open your phone and Google Four Kids in It, the movie. Look at the poster for this fucking thing.
So what this tells me, though, very unfortunately, is that Bill Nighy and
Michael Caine
have never worked together before. And that is a sham. Michael Caine, if you are listening to this right now, please leave retirement for one movie to do it with Bill Nighy. The world is asking of you and Bill Nighy to do a movie together. Something British, something oh so British. Please, please give that to us.
Please.
All right, that's the end of my plea.
Yeah. I think that's the end of this episode.
Right? I mean, like, there's no real pretext to this movie, I guess, because A, it does not come out theatrically. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's just
a TV movie.
It's a TV movie.
How quickly does the trilogy?
It seemingly does well.
How quickly does the trilogy come out one after the other? Like, are they like a year apart? Are they like months?
Page 8 is 2011.
And this is 2014.
This is 2014. Insulting the Battlefield comes out 2 weeks after this. Oh, or 1 week after this. They released them a week apart.
So maybe they just made Page 8, and because it did so well, they're we got to make this a trilogy. Okay.
The British are so crazy.
Wow.
But I think that's it, right? You got anything else to say about Turks and Caicos?
I have nothing else to say. I think that is all.
Okay.
Next week, we're going to do a retrospective.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about Winona's starts and stops.
Yes.
I'm looking at this list, and you have it called the starts and stops era. Are you going to keep that?
I'll figure it out. Okay. I might change it.
Okay. But yeah, so.
Yeah. Starts and stops. It started and it stopped.
Started.
We'll figure out what the name is going to be.
Well, I mean, from where we put the dramatic explorations second recap episode, I mean, it's a lot of stop, start, and then start.
Yeah, we're covering that area between her arrest and Stranger Things starting.
Yeah,
that's what the area we're recapping is next week. But then the week after that. We're taking a hiatus from Winona for a little bit. We've got something else to talk about. And then the week after that, we'll be back to Winona Moves with Experimenter.
Whoa.
But yeah, tune in next week for our episode retrospective or recapping this past era of Winona's career. It's been an interesting one. This is a great cat right here. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, anywhere you know you can listen to a podcast. We're probably there. At TrollTingPod, Twitter, or Instagram. Find me on Twitter at Jeff W. Sweeney. And then finally, special thanks as always to Rebecca for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegon Smith for the theme music. Have a great week, folks. See you next time for a recap.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.